You're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284 AL Haleiwa. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, volunteers, board, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Paul and Robin, and on today's show, we'll glean the overabundance of fruits from our island fruit trees, sink our teeth into an old-time heirloom treat from the kitchen garden, and pay tribute to the plant family Malvaceae. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our generous sponsors.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and Mower, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and Mower features Honda garden and lawn equipment and also Echo power equipment, 823-0556.
808 Equipment Rentals, providing Bobcat rentals island-wide with or without operator, including septic digging, vegetation removal, trenching, terracing, demolition, and more. Over 30 years of operating experience on Kauai. 808 Equipment Rentals in Molawa'a, 823-1000.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply. In Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
Aloha, Kauai. Robin, it's good to see you again.
It's great to be here.
Wonderful to be in the studio with you and the beautiful birds of Kokee singing to us.
And the rain. Who knows when we'll get more of that?
It's probably just around the corner. It seems like it hasn't disappeared for the season yet. Beautiful sunny day here on Kauai. Lots to share with you on the show, so we're going to jump right into our celestial session for the day, looking to the heavens for inspiration and guidance on our planting and gardening activities. Today's Hawaiian moon brought to you by the Hanalei Watershed Hui's 2014 calendar. And today's moon is Huna. Huna in the Poi Poi, Anahulu, or week of the Hawaiian calendar. Huna will rise on Kauai at 2:29 p.m. this afternoon. She'll reach her transit or highest point in the sky at 8:57 p.m. tonight. Be a beautiful moony night. And she'll set at 3:22 a.m. tomorrow morning. 73% of the moon's beautiful face is illuminated. And we've got the full moon coming up on Monday at April 14th at 9:43 p.m. The mana'o on Huna, it's the first of 10 moons in Poi Poi, which is the fullness or rounding of the moon. And it's said that the name Huna reflects the fact that this moon hides its horns for the first time during the moon cycle. Huna meaning hidden, secret, or hidden. It's also a minute particle, grain, crumb, gram, speck, a tiny bit, a scrap, minutia, small, little, or powdery. The planting recommendations for today: root plants will flourish hidden under dense foliage, and especially gourds, which will be hidden under their leaves. And we've had some huge edible gourds coming out of the food forest lately. So thank you to the Aina for that abundance.
Is it the opu? type gourd?
This is the tabungao, the Filipino style. So if you get them young, they're a bit more edible, but boy, they swell to a tremendous size pretty fast. So you got to be on it, like so many of our vegetables. Got to get out there on a regular basis so that you can get them when they're young and succulent.
Sure. Planting is only really one part, and it is kind of the fun part in some ways compared to the daily routine of harvesting. And we'll get to more harvesting talk later in the show. For now, in the biodynamic look at things, we are in the planting time. Today, the moon's in Cancer, which is a water sign, making it a good day to work with our leaf plants. Some good choices right now are Asian greens like bok choy and pak choy, summer heat-tolerant lettuces, and arugula grows well right now. Thursday and Friday, the moon will be in Leo, and those will be unproductive days due to some oppositions happening with the larger planets. And Saturday through Tuesday, well, that's a long stretch, the moon will be in Virgo, which is an earth sign, making it a good time to work with our rooting plants, and particularly planting our root plants. Virgo is one of the largest signs in the sidereal zodiac, as they're all not equally 30 degrees in that system. And planting roots like beets, taro, even potatoes, and if you haven't gotten your ginger and turmeric plantings in the ground yet, this would be an excellent stretch of time to be thinking about doing that. So that's Saturday through next Tuesday.
I'm keeping an eye on our uhi, those little corms or the aerial tubers that form along the vines of the climbing uhi or Hawaiian yam. And they are still dormant, but I'm definitely watching them intently. And as soon as they sprout, they're going to go in the ground for a nice big harvest coming up at the end of the year.
Awesome. Well, still on the subject of roots, we'll head into the kitchen garden right now. And I'd like to talk about the Lutz beet, other sometimes known in seed catalogs as the Lutz lettuce leaf beet. Lutz beet is an old-time heirloom variety. I'm really excited about it because I'm growing a nice crop right now. And you basically get two vegetables in one. You're getting Swiss chard, essentially, in the leaves, and then you're getting this fabulous, delicious root to eat as well.
Can you be harvesting leaves off the plant while it's growing and you won't be cheating yourself too much for the root growth?
Absolutely. If you're not overzealous on your harvesting, you definitely want to leave the plant plenty of leaves to be photosynthesizing with. The leaves are so wonderful, steamed up, and the whole family is the spinach family, chard and beets, as we've talked about in the past on the show. So you just get these great, awesome charred leaves when they're steamed up with a little butter and salt on them, are just absolutely delicious. Seeds are available from Territorial Seed Company, Baker Creek, Bountiful Gardens, and they are best when planted in the fall and winter months to be harvested off in the spring. They don't grow quite as easily in the hot summer months here. But these beets are red from a compound called betalain. They're low calorie. They're an excellent source of folates, B vitamins, iron, magnesium, potassium, as long as your soils are balanced and you have those things available for the plant to be eating. If you eat them raw, you get the most nutritional benefit out of the roots themselves. So grating them up in salads is a great choice. The tops are actually more nutritious in a lot of ways than the roots are. They are high in carotenoids, flavonoid antioxidants, vitamin A. It's several more times than the roots have of those same very same compounds. So Lutz lettuce leaf beet, definitely rare to find those at market, although they are out there occasionally. Definitely one of those vegetables you have to plant yourself in order to get them.
And how would I know a Lutz beet if I was trying to differentiate it?
Most likely by the size and stature of the leaves attached to it. And also the root itself is a little more pink, not quite as dark red, has a different kind of skin. It doesn't have the same skin as the typical red beet that we would find bunched up at markets. Some farmers actually even sell just the leaves bunched up also as a chard.
Yum.
Yeah.
Lunchtime for sure.
Worth growing.
Sounds really good to me. I'm going to pop in an opportunity for our listeners to be the change that we want to see in the world. And we want to thank Kauai'i Rising, a great nonprofit organization here on the island that has come up with a charter amendment initiative to give the power to the people and put the onus or the responsibility upon those folks who are using chemical pesticides on the island to prove that they are not harming the environment or the health of the people. This is a bit more of a proactive, assertive move, similar to Bill 2491 from last year. Right now, Kauai'i Rising is out in the community gathering signatures to get this charter amendment onto the ballot in the fall. And for more information, you can go to kauairising.org. They have a really nice website with lots of information about that opportunity and with all of our different agriculturally based events that are coming up soon that we'll talk about later in the show. Have a look out for some of the Kauai Rising folks to add your name to the to this amendment if you would so choose to sign the petition to get this on the ballot. And I know that they're also interested in getting community members who would be interested in gathering signatures on the petition as well. So great opportunity for us to be the change we want to see in the world.
Sure, that is beautifully proactive, because in some of the reading I've been doing, typically the onus is on the people who don't want the chemicals to prove that they are harmful. And so I really like the reversal. It seems a little like it has more justice in it this way for me. So that's really great they're doing that.
Indeed. Thank you, Kauai'i Rising, all you great folks out there.
Yeah, my name's on the petition already.
This is In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts Paul and Robin. Later in the show, we're going to dive into explorations with a very special creature that lives in the compost pile. For some folks here on Kauai'i, an organism you may want to include in the mix if you don't have it already. And we'll also be talking about gleaning and community gardens and lots of great things with some special guests we have in the studio. But right now we're going to start off this month. Our focus is on one of the most treasured plant families here in the tropics, in the Hawaiian Islands, for many good reasons. And we are going to cover in detail this month the family Malvaceae.
Yeah.
So for folks who've never heard of that family, what are we talking about here, Robin?
Well, Malvaceae contain plants like cotton, okra, hibiscus, very well-known and well-loved state flower that it is, roselles, rose of Sharon, abutilons, also a nice native grouping of abutilons. But you know how I like to just go outward a little bit. And in the Malvaceae family is in the order Malvales, and included in some other orders in that very same grouping are the Euphorbiales. And in Euphorbs, we have things like cassava and crotons, another popular landscape plant, castor beans, jatropas, and in yet another order, we have figs, banyans, breadfruits, mulberries. And even in the Malvales order itself, closely related to the plants we'll talk about today is the linden tree, which really is truly one of my favorite mainland trees. When you've walked underneath one of those linden trees when in bloom, it really is like stepping into a cloud of joy. At any rate, so interesting to me that plants like kukui are fairly nearly related to the Malvaceae that we're going to talk about today.
Almost kissing cousins, perhaps. Second cousins, maybe.
Yeah, like that.
But within the family, we're looking at 200 genera and some 2,300 species within Malvaceae, the hibiscus family, it's often called. Recently, Bombaceae, Tiliaceae, and Sterculiaceae, formally recognized as their own families, have been put into Malvaceae, and so it's swelled in size and it's included some interesting plants we'll get to. We have a truly global distribution of this plant family. Most of the plants are mucilaginous or have that sort of slimy blood, if you will, cocoa, or if you break a stem, or maybe if you're eating something like okra or edible hibiscus, you'll find that slimy quality, which is actually quite good for our digestion. Good for our digestive system and our mucous membranes. We've got 31 native species in the Hawaiian Islands.
Wow.
15 on Kauai and 7 what are called single island endemic plants. That is to say, 7 species within this family that exist nowhere else except our beautiful garden island. We also have 36 naturalized species, meaning those that were brought by humans, in Hawaii, 19 on Kauai. So not as many as I thought, actually, in my research. And then going into the cultivated plants, not those that have persisted on in the environment, but you can find in gardens and farms around the islands, 25 cultivated genera, 180 cultivated species, and so many different cultivars, varieties in Hawaii. Because this is an ornamental plant and people have been developing those varieties of hibiscus that I know Robin's going to tell us some of the gems in there.
Sure. Can I jump right in there?
Please.
It seems, I checked out hibiscusworld.com, which is actually an Australian website. So we know these plants are well distributed into the other Pacific islands too. We have variety names like Adrenaline and Lucky Devil. There's the Great Idea. There's Max Delight. There's Miss Marmalade, Misfire, Monet, Sassy, Sheba. I mean, it goes on and on. People have developed so many beautiful hybrid varieties of hibiscus, and you can always tell when you're at the nursery and you're looking at those, the price tag is about 2 to 3 times what a kind of a regular sort of normal hibiscus would be. And often these plants have been grafted to a rootstock. The hybrid varieties tend not to take well by cuttings, whereas lots of the other hibiscus family members, especially the kind of common red one, I mean, literally, you can just lop off a nice branch and plant it in the ground, and you've got a shrub in about 6 months. They're really an amazing, amazing plant.
Truly. So jumping into the food plants, okra and roselle, some of our favorites that we're going to get into some more depth next week, talking about good growing techniques on those. Again, I had mentioned that some other plant families have been considered by the plant taxonomists and now included within Malvaceae, which means that now cacao, the chocolate tree, Theobroma cacao, is now included within Malvaceae. As well, a plant that could also have found its place into our fresh pick segment, durian. One of the most prized and reviled fruits. Probably not one that we'll find if we go out gleaning our fruits off of trees that are not harvested adequately. The durian, super prized, and for those few folks who are lucky enough to find them at the farmer's market, have a look this time of year. Baobab also, that wonderful sort of elephantine tree from Africa, Madagascar, and there's one from Australia as well. This is a food plant as well as ornamental. The fruits are edible, the young leaves even. And also edible hibiscus, a really popular plant for that food security garden or edible landscape, also known as Tongan spinach or bele. this plant from India, Indonesia, Australia, all the way to the Philippines, which I thought was interesting. It doesn't seem like a super popular plant in Filipino gardens, but there it is, a native plant of the Philippines, this edible hibiscus. High in protein, 5% protein, and they say that the folks who live in the highlands of Papua New Guinea derive a lot of their protein source from edible hibiscus.
Wow, far out.
Indeed. So weeds, not too many problematic ones except for Sacramento burr, really terrible plant of disturbed areas. Unfortunately, large populations in Waimea Canyon, and just this really pernicious burr with lots of little prickles on it that will get into you or probably into your dog's coat. Maybe livestock has a problem, I would imagine, with this troubling plant. One of those plants that if I see a young one coming up, recognize that leaf structure and get that thing out of the ground before it sets seed. And I've got a whole number of plants I'd love to mention.
Oh, sure. I just find it really fascinating now that I'm thinking about it, that we're talking about it, that the taxonomy didn't really stop with Linnaeus, that there's so many developments now that people can sequence plants genetically, and there's so many other ways to link plants up. I find it so interesting that in the last, say, 20 years, so much shuffling has gone on between these plant families. Say, oh, no, it's really not as closely related to that as we thought. It really belongs over here. I find that very fascinating. I thought taxonomy might have been sort of a sleepy major for college, would-be college students, but it seems to me that there's a lot of action there.
There truly is. Even in the past 5 years, one of the great resources I use as far as a printed publication is Plant Families of the World, published by the Royal Botanic Gardens. And, you know, I think it's about 6 years old now. And when I check it up against Wikipedia's entries, it's obvious that things have changed even in that time period in terms of lumping different families or even on the order, that super order standpoint, things are changing around a bit. So Malvaceae family also has some really useful utility plants, and a food and utility plant, maybe the most valuable commodity crop in this family, is cotton. Mm-hmm. And we have a variety of different cottons here, Gossypium species. We do have a native species. And it's obviously for the fiber, but also for an edible oil. And we can grow it quite easily and well here in Hawaiian gardens. And the uses that you can come up with for cotton balls that are just hanging off the trees are more than I thought when I first gave it a consideration. So definitely a plant that will be a good friend for you in the garden. And I've really saved the treasured plants for last, and those are our native plants in the Malvaceae family. As Robin mentioned, we have a couple of abutilons, or I think there's four altogether, but a couple that are particularly wonderful that you might consider growing in your ornamental slash plant conservation garden would be the Ko'oloa ula, or Abutilon menziesii, beautiful silvery leafed shrub with pendant dark red flowers, not native to Kauai, but native to some of the main other main Hawaiian islands. And then its relative, the hidden petal ilima, Abutilon eremitopetalum. And this one is only native to Lanai and has odd pendant flowers similar to the first one I mentioned, but it doesn't have any petals, or at least they're not visible. So a real interesting plant there. And then jumping into our Kauai natives, we have the Ma'ohelhele hibiscus brackenridgii, and actually the subspecies that was native to Kauai and known from a couple of locations is now thought to be extinct in the wild. There's always that opportunity we're going to find that last refuge, but this plant is available. This is Hibiscus brackenridgii subspecies Moculeanus. Very ornamental, beautiful, fragrant yellow flowers, We can get the regular Breckenridgei from the Department of Land and Natural Resources has a rare plant sale every year around Arbor Day. And they have the subspecies Breckenridgei that grows quite well and regenerates in the garden. We'll throw seed and you'll have them sprouting up, which is quite fun. I mentioned the ma'o, the Hawaiian cotton, already important plant for instilling disease resistant to commercial varieties of cotton. We're also growing the Akiohala hibiscus fursilatus, an indigenous plant in the Hawaiian Islands with beautiful pink flowers. And I was just noticing yesterday that we had cut back a plant. I thought that this plant was maybe like some of the other hibiscus, like Roselle, where it really gives so much in one season that, yes, it will live the next year, but it's not really going to do what it did in the first season. But these cutback plants are sprouting back heavily and already flowering. So, and then I read even in my research, a long-lived tree. So try that. Akiohala will have seeds at the seed exchange coming up in a couple of weeks. Ilima, of course, an important lay plant of the coastal area, also grows up to the mountains in more of a bush habit, but it's a prostrate plant down by the shoreline in most cases, although I have seen an upright plant on Maui. We have the Milo tree, an important hardwood tree here in Hawaii for woodworking, and indigenous here as well. We've got the Hi'aloa, which we've mentioned on a show recently, in the medicine chest, which is an indigenous plant that is beneficial for sore throats. And then we're going to get into our Kokia ula, a couple different kinds. This is Hibiscus clayi, a single island endemic of Kauai, known from a couple of populations historically, but now just a single population on the east side of Kauai. Does very well in ornamental landscapes. And then we have our Kokio keokeo, or the white kokio, the white hibiscus, two species, one species with a subspecies. The first one can be seen in abundance in Waimea Canyon, beautiful big trees covered with very large, super fragrant, amazing white flowers with red stamens.
And so really beautiful.
One of the most stunning plants you could just walk out into the wilds of Kauai and see growing. The first time I saw them, I thought somebody must have lived here and this is sort of a remnant planting from somebody's, but here it is on an amazing hillside in Waimea Canyon. So no, this in fact is our native kokio. And then the subspecies Hanerai from the northwest side of the island, native to Hanakapi'i, Limahuli, and I saw a record that said it was also from Kalihiwai Valley. So this is similar to the Waimea variety, but has very small, very ornamental, beautiful flowers. Love to see that more in the horticultural trade and in the garden shops around the island. And maybe for folks who go to the garden fair, you might be lucky enough. I know that NTBG, the National Tropical Botanical Garden, has brought a few of those plants to the garden fair before, so I don't know, but I'm crossing my fingers that they'll have them coming up at the event coming up in a couple weeks. We also have the subspecies St. Johnianus of the Hibiscus kokio, known from the Nepali coast with an orange flower. And then, just to finish it off, on the rare side, we have Hauhele ula, Kokia kauaiensis, a magnificent, ultra-rare tree of Kalalau and other parts of the northwest side of the island, declining heavily because of introduced insect pressure, but still throwing off these outrageous blossoms, and a beautiful plant that the good folks up at Limahuli Garden are having quite good luck propagating there and even have it regenerating in their garden. So that's very exciting.
Excellent.
Super, super good. Other rare relatives would be in the Hibiscus adelphus, known as Hau Kuahivi. and found in Kalalau and Waimea Canyon. Also respond well to cultivation, a small statured plant that would be very good in that sort of a placement in your garden. Heavy flower set, an ancestor of the hibiscus genus. And then just to finish it off with a really common plant that we love for so many reasons here on the garden show is Hau. Yes, it's Hau bush, which can be quite a troubling plant if you have one that's out of control in the garden, but at the same time, an amazing mulch plant and a great biomass plant. And I would encourage anybody who has Hau on their property not to consider it a pest, but to consider it a regenerative plant that can produce a lot of biomass and a lot of good mulch in the years to come. So definitely care for that Hau bush and show it the respect it deserves as a native plant here in Hawaii.
Yeah, we are so blessed with such a plethora of different hibiscus here. And one of the things that when I was listening to you occurred to me when you talked about the native cotton, that it can be useful in modern agriculture to look to these older plants for some of their wildness to introduce back into these highly cultivated species. And listening to the enormously long list of all the native hibiscus plants, it seems that there's potential there for breeding, which I'm sure lots has already been
certainly
worked on.
And it's been said that the Hawaiian hibiscus is the only hibiscus that is scented. And so I know that it's been used in crosses with the Hibiscus rosa sinensis, that common Chinese hibiscus that we see as an ornamental plant here, to imbue both the white color as well as the fragrance too. So
phenomenal.
Great thanks to Malvasier. We're going to be dropping into more details as the month goes on. Good growing techniques. I want to let you know that you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284 AL Haleiwa on the north shore of Oahu. And right now we're going to switch gears and jump into a discussion with a special guest we have in the studio. And we are really happy to be joined by Gray Hayden. And Gray is here on the north shore of Kauai, making gardens abundant and bringing our attention to the abundance that we can share with the community in a beautiful way. Gray was raised a farmer in upstate New York, and he is the manager of Po'oku Community Garden at the Church of the Pacific in Princeville. And thanks to him, we are building better community through better food. Gray, thanks so much for coming into the studio. You're a busy guy.
Thank you very much for having me, Paul.
Right on. So let's jump right into it and hear about first the community garden. That's where I met you maybe about a year and a half ago, and you were very kind to help host one of our seed and plant exchanges there. Had a lot of fun, and I saw a recent picture of your community garden just busting out with greens.
I have to thank everybody in this room for that, because Robin, those plants that you gave me are just kicking. We've been feeding people for 3 weeks off the kale now.
Yes.
Yeah. Everything that we do in the community garden is for one reason only. Today is our food pantry at the Church of the Pacific, and everything that we harvest out of the garden is given away on the food pantry for free.
Wow. What a gift.
It's been a joy. I was given a big plot of dirt to play in, and I just have to grow things.
But you don't do it alone, and you can't do it alone.
Nope. I have to thank Joseph here. He's been helping me getting the soil up and running so that we can grow those beautiful plants. Just like Robin was mentioned earlier, you have to have the proper food in the soil for those plants to grow the way that they're supposed to. And right now, we're getting a lot of good food out of that garden.
Yes, and we are joined in the studio by Joseph Dunsmore, one of our esteemed organic producers here on the island and instructor of good ecological farming practices. Joseph, it's good to have you back in the studio with us.
Yes, thank you.
So how did your partnership at Church of the Pacific come to be?
Well, I started working with the community garden about 5 or 6 years ago. And I was brought in, and at that time it was just a grassy field, and we started it out, and I taught about 12 classes to a group of about 20, and we started the garden, and we came up with a very beautiful design, kind of a flower of life kind of design, and it was very much different than what I would have done because I do straight lines. And we did the class, and the garden continued with a lot of input and from different groups and different people, and then it kind of like dwindled, and then Gray got involved, and then it got reinvented, and it's actually a very large garden and has potential to be a lot larger. So the Church of Pacific brought me in again to work with the soils. We took a soil test, and then they were very generous with allowing enough money to be spent to buy all the fertilizers we need. And then together with Gray and Robin growing the plants, it all worked. It's beautiful.
Sounds really good. So how do folks get involved in this process? What's the weekly schedule look like?
Well, right now our weekly schedule is Wednesday. We're up there all day long, so anybody that wants to come up and see what the garden's going on, today's the day to do it. I'm actually taking a bit of time out from handling all that at the moment to come play here.
Well, thank you for doing that. We're so grateful to have you here in the studio.
No, thank you for the opportunity to let me talk up the garden, because to me it's one of the greatest joys to literally get your hands in the dirt, grow your own food, and give it away to folks that need good food. And that's what we've been doing up here. I've been involved with garden going on 3 years now, and I've got enough energy. I like to make dirt turn into soil and then start planting things. It's just my joy.
I can see that. You got a lot of good energy. And so tell us about some of the other projects that you've been working on there.
Well, one of the things that I noticed when I first came here to the island, I noticed that there was a lot of underutilized fruit trees. I started gleaning. Being involved with the food pantry, I started gleaning, bringing in fruit for, distribution on Wednesdays. Liability has been a big issue for getting on people's property. You knock on the door, say, hey, I'd like to take your fruit off your hands. And they're like, well, liability. Well, 1996, the Bill Emerson Good Samaritan Food Donation Act, signed into law by Bill Clinton, sort of eliminated that. We have a excerpt in the law that says you, as a landowner, or even the person renting the land, if you want to get that fruit off of your property and you're going to give it to me for free, me as a representative of a nonprofit agency that feeds the hungry, as it makes us both good Samaritans, that eliminates the civil liability between us, so that I can actually come onto your property and there's fall out of your tree. I mean, even the worst case scenario, no civil liability between us. It allows me to get into a lot more properties and bring in a lot more fruit than I'd been able to.
Yeah, I can imagine if you knock on someone's door with a 20-foot orchard ladder, they might get a little nervous, yeah? But that's great news. I wasn't aware of that bill, so that really helps everybody out.
It helps everybody because 30 years ago, there was a large influx of people here, and they bought into the little agricultural plots, especially up in the Kilauean area, and they had to have fruit trees to maintain their tax status. Well, now they're hitting in their 60s and 70s, and maintaining fruit trees is a difficult thing. Mm-hmm. Having someone that you can trust to actually come in on your property, harvest the fruit, knowing that your fruit's going to go away to a good cause, feed people that need to be fed, then it works out for both of us. You don't end up with the pigs in your backyard, and I can help you maintain your trees.
And sometimes that fruit is hard enough to get out or challenging enough for some homeowners that they're not even eating the fruit before it hits the ground and goes bad. So I imagine if you go do the gleaning that you're going to leave some nice fruit for the homeowners themselves.
Always. Never. Actually, I always start picking the trees at the top with my long pickers. The low fruit, easy for the homeowners to have, yeah. I was raised a farmer. You never take everything on the tree. There's always a process where things are coming ripe at different times. You know, just because you're getting an avocado now doesn't mean every one of them's ripe.
That's right.
You actually have to have an eye. And then with the homeowner, you work with them, you always leave anything they want behind. And other than that, it's always worked out good for me for almost 3 years now.
Wow, fantastic. So what's the program called?
Gleaning Kauai. And, well, I'm Gleaning Kauai.
Great, great. And so how can people reach you?
Well, you can reach me at gleaningkauai@yahoo.com, or you can reach me at my phone number, 808-333-6823. I'm happy to take calls, get fruit, and I'd love to get more calls and more fruit.
It sounds like a fun adventure. If folks are interested in volunteering with you to go out and glean, is that a possibility as well?
Well, one of the things that's going on this island, there are over 50 food pantries that distribute food to...
Wow.
A lot of folks don't know that. We're just one of 50 that deliver, I mean, whether it's a bag or a meal or something a month, there's 50 agencies that do food every month. We happen to do it every week. Those agencies would always like to have more fruit. I don't want to be the only gleaner on the island, but I would like to be a contact where folks that want to learn how to glean, they can come to me. I can show you where the food banks are, how to get the food into them when they need it. So contact me. I'd be happy to get this going so that I'm not the only one that's bringing food into one pantry. I'd like to have 50 people bringing food into 50 pantries.
Yeah,
fantastic,
excellent.
Gray. So throw out those contacts one more time for folks who want to get involved at the Church of the Pacific Community Garden or with your gleaning program.
Any Wednesday, you can come up to the Church of the Pacific. We're there from 7:30 to 5:30. Saturdays from 9 till noon, I'm in the garden and beyond if I've got the help to keep me going. My contacts, which you can reach me at, are Gleaning Kauai, GLEANING Kauai @yahoo.com. And my phone number again is 808-333-6823.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for your work.
Super, super yummy to be eating off of the land here on Kauai. You reduce our import of food from abroad and take advantage of all that food that's just happening.
Absolutely. And so many of the folks that are patronizing the food banks are either our elders or young families that are struggling financially a little bit, who have children. So when we think about this, taking care of our kapuna here on Kauai and our keiki, what a wonderful way to spend our energy.
We do a good job feeding just about everybody that comes in there. We have a box system that we take to the elderly. We're now delivering to the Anahola Beach for 25. We're reaching out to everybody out there and having more to pass out. That's just what we're looking for.
Give thanks for your work. You're listening to KKCR, and this is In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Paul and Robin. We want to invite you to stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations at 1 o'clock with Tracy. And with our time remaining, we're going to dip into Secrets of the Soil Builders. And we're happy to have Joseph back on the program with us to share his love of a particular resident of the compost pile and those places where decaying plant matter fall and need to be digested. So this is perhaps a new organism for some, and others were already singing the praises.
Well, thank you for inviting me to talk about millipedes and arthropods. They're my favorite pets because I don't have to do much to keep them, and they're very entertaining. When it rains or you put the millipedes in a pile with lots of food, they become very amorous and they're fun to watch. So it's they're very exciting for me.
I love it. We've entered the new realm of pets in the compost heap. Well, I have seen the work of this particular millipede that we have here in the studio with us right now. We'll be careful not to let it digest our notes because it is a hungry bugger, but it's the Puerto Rican millipede that you're talking about. Yeah, Joseph?
Yeah, the orange ones, they're about an inch or an inch and a half long. They're not very thick. They millipedes, meaning they 1,000 legs, but really they only have about 700. And they usually roll themselves up into a little orange ball or kind of reddish brown, I guess you'd call it. And I have a long history with millipedes. I started playing with them about 20 years ago when I was doing municipal composting in Puerto Rico. And in Puerto Rico at that time, I was getting a lot of waste with a lot of trash. And so there was a lot of millipedes available. So I started to use the millipedes to break down the organic material and then just sift out the trash and take that to the landfill. And then all the millipede manure I was harvesting, and it was really a great bonus for the garden. And the Puerto Ricans, they really love millipedes. They are fascinated by millipedes, and mainly because I think it's the way they're so amorous and the way they kiss. And they're just, like I said, they're really fun to watch. And I became famous in Puerto Rico. They did television shows and documentaries, and I was in the newspapers. And the millipedes are just very popular there. And then when I moved to Kauai, I was doing the municipal composting for Green Waste for Kauai Nursery and Landscape. And for the first 5 years, I couldn't find a millipede on the island. I'd go everywhere, and I just never could find them. And I even thought about bringing them in, but I knew that if they ever became noxious and people found out I brought them in, you know, I'd be like, nobody would like me anymore. So I held off. And one day in Moloa'a, I found them. So we get a lot of green waste at Waipa Foundation, where I'm consultant there. And we've just brought them into population of the millions. So we have millions of them now. And we have compost piles that are just pure little black poops. And some of them are 2 or 3 feet thick. And I can harvest truckloads of these little black poops. So
it's really like the finest black humus that you ever have laid eyes on. I first experienced them, Joseph, in Hyena. I had a compost, a mulch pile. I was landscaping, and I started to notice, like, wow, this is really breaking down fast. And sure enough, I see the little red curly cues in there, and I knew it was them. I didn't know what they were called, but it's so fine you don't even have to really sift it. It's remarkable what they turn wood chips into.
It goes straight to humus. So it's a compost you can actually mix into the soil. Usually I sift it first to get out any wood that they haven't eaten. And then in a couple of weeks, it's just this humus. And it's, I guess they call it black gold, but it's really good for these red soils especially. Things really grow well when you add this compost. And so I've been doing a lot of experiments with it and adding it to my compost piles, and it's been working really good. And also using it in the humanure, and finding that they like all the paper and the humanure and all that. So they're quite a prize. They also go along with a different style of composting. One of the things that we've learned over the years is what I call hot composting or bacterial composting. And that's a composting system that was developed by man for waste reduction, but not for agriculture. And nature composts using fungi and arthropods like millipedes or the pill bugs or the roly-polies, not by creating heat and a bacterial compost. So you change your compost style a little bit, and those little black composters that the county gives out, which people try really hard to get them to get hot, generally don't get hot, but they're a perfect environment to put your arthropods and to create a fungal decomposition. And then when the wood waste starts to get broken down by the fungi, then the arthropods are basically eating this mushroom product.
So for folks who might be interested in what species we're talking about in my research, it seems that the one we're talking about, although it may be very similar to the Puerto Rican species, this is actually something called the rusty millipede, and the species is Trigonulus coralinus. And I did look it up on the Hawaii Ecosystems at Risk website, and there was no indication that they're harmful to the environment at all. There is also a related species, Trigonulus philippinus, which might already be on Kauai, is recorded in the Hawaiian Islands, but the record of the rusty millipede is definitely here on Kauai. So I was encouraged to see doesn't seem to be a problem in the environment, and I sure love these critters too. So how can we best get them if we don't have them already?
Well, I was thinking about helping to make them more available, and perhaps people could contact me if they wanted to get a few of them to get started in their compost. In the past, I've built terrariums, and I would just put some millipedes in there and then feed them in the terrarium, and they would build up population. They're very amorous, like I said, so they multiply very rapidly. And once you get them, and as long as you feed them and keep them multiplying in your compost, they're going to be there. They're going to be around. So if you don't have them in your yard because, let's say, it used to be a pineapple field and they killed everything in the past, and you want to reintroduce them, you just have to be able to find somebody who has them in their pile and get a few of them and get them started in yours.
Would you like to give a contact for folks who want to get started with some of those millipedes?
Sure. They could call me at 639-3256.
Great. Thank you, Joseph, so much for that.
One of the things that struck me the most is how quickly they work. I mean, they seem to be pretty nonstop eaters. I saw a giant pile of wood chips just go down to nothing in about 6 months.
They're very, very big eaters and very big poopers at the same time. So you get you get a really beautiful product, and it's so different than when we think of compost with all the undigested wood in it, and it tends not to be that good, especially if you mix it in with your garden soil. So this is a way to produce something that really works in the garden.
Love those millipedes. Well, I hate to break it there, but we've got a bunch of announcements. I've got it.
Sure. Before you go on, I just want to say part of the reason we cover topics like this is so that when you see a creature like that, you don't get freaked out and just like step on it or something. You want to, you know, there are values to these critters, and I just want to thank you, Joseph, for enlightening us all and sort of biting us with the bug of being excited about composting pets. So.
Thank you. Awesome. I feel bitten. I'm smitten and bitten. I'm going to jump into some quick announcements here. We have a Hawaii Farmers Union United Kauai chapter meeting tonight, Wednesday, April 9th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Anahola Clubhouse, located at 3900 Coelho Street in Anahola. It's going to be a local locavore community potluck, especially if you bring something great to eat, celebrating local food and the family farmers that produce it. This is a follow-up to last month's kickoff meeting where we talked about the potential. This is going to be organizing and deciding what the Kauai chapter is really going to focus on. So this will be a very active meeting. If you want more information, you can go to hawaiifarmersunionunited.org. We'll have a seed packaging party at the Kauai Community Seed Bank this Friday, April 11th, starting at 10 a.m., getting seeds all packaged up for the seed and plant exchange. If you want, it's located in Molawa'a. Call me for directions if you're interested in playing seeds with us, 652-4118. A Hawaii Tropical Fruit Growers Association meeting Thursday, April 10th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the KCC OSET Room 105. Richard Ibisu, UH Agricultural Extension Agent, will give a talk on growing papaya. For more information on the association, which is now celebrating its 25th anniversary, go to hawaiitropicalfruitgrowers.org. There's also a KCC apiary program class coming up this Saturday, April 12th, and will be held the following Saturday as well. It's a feral hive and removal hive split class. And if you want more information, call KCC OSET at 245-8318. Thanks to Jimmy Trujillo for that great class as well. We do have the 13th Biannual Kauai Community Seed and Plant Exchange coming up Saturday, April 19th from noon to 5 p.m. at Waipa Foundation, a free event, part of the Kauai Earth Day Rising celebration. For more information, go to ribg.org. Now is a great time to get your plants ready, and check out our website for some tips on making sure that your plants are pest-free, disease-free, invasive-free, and GMO-free for bringing to share with the community. The same day, the 19th annual Garden Fair is being held at Kauai Community College from 9:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., a special all-day farmers market, garden talks and demonstrations, educational, government and nonprofit resources for your farm or home garden, activities for the Keikis, and Ono local food, brought to you by the Kauai County Farm Bureau, and you can go to their website for more information. And Earth Day Rising 4 is happening, coming up also on April 18th through the 20th, also at Waipa Foundation in Hanalei. Lots of great live music, workshops, and including workshops on homesteading techniques like slaughtering your own chicken and edible landscaping and cheese making and lots of great fun stuff. You can find more information at earthdayrising.org. If you'd like your ag-related event or announcement shared on air, please email it a couple of weeks in advance to inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com. We'd like to thank the other members of the In the Garden on the Farm team, our engineer Jack, our phone tech Mac, our webmaster Laura Christine, and our station manager Dean. Mahalo for your contributions. If you want to hear previous broadcasts of the show, go to kkcr.org, click the audio archive link at the top of the page. And that's it for our announcements.
Okay, great. Just want to field a caller question from earlier in the show on tips on cooking beet greens, steaming, light boiling, slice the stems very small, chop the leaves up. They cook in just a few minutes. And this has been In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Robin and Paul. We'd like to thank our guests on the show today, Gray Hayton of Gleaning Kauai. You can reach him at gleaningkauai@yahoo.com or give him a phone call at 808-333-6823. And also Joseph Dunsmore. Thank you so much today. Joseph can be reached at 639-3256. Please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. Aloha.